This podcast is proudly produced and presented by the Zoomer Podcast Network, home of great podcasts like Marilyn Lightstone Reads, Idea City on the Air, and The Garden Show. You're listening to an exclusive podcast of the Naz and Wally Sports Hour, heard Sunday mornings at 9 on Zoomer Radio, the new AM 740.
From hockey to wrestling, football to golf, no sport left unturned. You're listening to the Naz and Wally Sports Hour on Zoomer Radio, the new AM 740. Good morning, Naz. Good morning, Wally. The boys are back. Let's talk sports.
Good morning and welcome to the Naz and Wally Sports Hour. I'm your host, Walter Rigabon. As usual, with me, but not in studio, remotely, Naz Marchese. Good morning, Naz. How are you?
Good, Wally. How are you?
Good. I just want to let our listeners know we want to get right to it. We interviewed Don Cherry yesterday afternoon, almost the entire hour. And it's taped. We're going to play it for you now. Naz, your thoughts on the interview?
It was really good. And we need to thank Don for his time. There's some things that, well, in the interview that will be fascinating for the listeners, I'm sure.
Anyways, without further ado, we're going to turn it over. Naz and I will have a couple of minutes after the interview's over to come back on the line, and we'll have a brief chat about the interview and Don Cherry. So to all our listeners, Brandon, our producer, take it over. Enjoy.
We're pleased to welcome to the Naz and Wally Sports Hour. We've been wanting to talk to you for a long time. Donald S. Cherry. Donald, pleasure. Thanks for joining us. We really appreciate it.
Hi, Naz. Wally, how you doing?
We're doing fantastic. Thanks so much for joining us. First thing I got to ask you, Don, how are you doing? How are things going?
I'm doing good. I'm doing what I'm told. I'm watching a lot of television, watching my three goldfish, and on Sunday I do my podcast with my son and my grandson and my daughter, and I have a lot of fun at that. We have a lot of fun at it. We do it every Sunday.
Tell us about your podcast. You haven't been on Hockey Night in Canada, and we've agreed we're not gonna chat about the negative things that have happened to you. So let's talk about some of the positive things.
Well, that's good.
You've got a podcast going. Tell our listeners all about it.
Yeah, like we do. My son asked me to do it, and I have a lot of fun. We pick it up on Spotify, I guess, and Apple Facebook and Don Cherry's Grapevine. So on YouTube, we have a lot of fun, and we talk about hockey stories, and he brings up pretty good stories all the time. So we have a lot of fun at it. It's supposed to be about a half hour.
Just so our listeners know, just a reminder at this point, Naz and I are safely in our homes. We're doing this remotely, and Don is joining us by phone, and he's remote as well. We'll make every effort not to talk over each other. Sometimes it's not the easiest thing to do, but certainly we'll do the best we can. Naz, feel free to jump in anytime you want.
I'll jump in right now. How's that?
Go ahead.
Good. Hey, Don, born in Kingston, Ontario. Where did you play your minor hockey?
Well, I played a lot of minor hockey in Kingston, Ontario. As you know, I played Junior B there for the Victoria Bills, and then I graduated to that's the way they used to do it. He graduated to the Barrie Flyers, Barrie Colts now, and we won the Memorial Cup. We had our team was so good that I think they call it the best team money could buy. And so I think we did it the way it should be done. We beat out the Marlies, we beat out the Toronto Marlboros, and then we beat out the St. Mike's, Toronto St. Mike's. And then we went, we traveled down to Quebec, and we beat the Quebec Citadels. And then we took the train out west, and we beat the St. Boniface Canadiens. So that's the way it used to be. Now they've done it, they do it for television, which is, you know, I guess they have to do it for television. But I liked it the way it was. There was no fooling around. You either won or you lost. And there were 4 out of 7, and we went longer than the National Hockey League. We were going into almost June.
So who were some of the players that you had on the team that people would recognize?
Well, we had Doug Mones. Doug Mones was very good in the National Hockey League. And Don McKinney. And we had Orville Chessie. I think he coached Chicago. So we had, but Hap Evans was the guy that was the force behind it. He was he owned the electric store in Barrie, and he was a tyrant. I'll tell you, he was the smartest guy, one of the smartest guys I ever played for, and I think he won the Memorial Cup 3 times, and twice in a row. So he put out, I think at the time he put out 52 pros. So he was. He was a tough guy to play for, but he knew what he was talking about.
The Barrie Flyers, of course, ended up becoming the Niagara Falls Flyers. And Don, you spent a lot of time in the American Hockey League. In fact, yeah. you got one game in the NHL. I think, if I'm not mistaken, it was you got called up in the playoffs, didn't you? Wasn't Boston playing Montreal or?
Yeah, it was myself and a gentleman called Norm Corcoran. We went up and we didn't expect to play. We were like the black aces in case somebody got hurt. And one of the players, Warren Godfrey, I think, hurt his wrist. And I filled in for him and I took a regular shift. And I'll never forget it. That was the time that they were I'll never forget that game. I was standing there at the blue line and Bernie Jeffrion won the scoring title, and when he went on the ice to get, I forget what he got, they booed him, and I couldn't figure it out. And what they told me afterwards that it was the only time that Rocket Richard could have won the scoring title, and Bernie, I think, beat him by 2 points or something like that. And as you know, the Rocket, he was just loved in when you love him, and he was loved in Montreal. And and then the Rocket went on. I forget what he got. He's got some meaningless gift, and he was absolutely cheered ready. Holy smokes. And then I found out later that he was suspended for hitting Lako over the head with a stick or something. And I mean, it was like a circus. I'll tell you, when I said, boy, is this happening in the National Hockey League all the time?
John, you were signing a contract with Hershey, your first contract, right? In the American League in 1954.
Yeah, I played for Springfield, and I played for Hershey. I started out playing for Hershey, then at Springfield, then I played in Rochester, and I played 4 years in Rochester, and for Joe Crozier. Joe Crozier was the general manager, coach. Found out he was the owner later, him and Punch Imlach, and we won 3 championships and 1 final. So we had a pretty good club. The National Hockey League didn't want to play us in exhibition games because we used to beat them all the time.
Don, I got to ask you. You spent your entire career in the American Hockey League. You moved the homes 53 times.
Yeah, we I don't know how we ever did it. I remember Rose. I remember coming home one day. I'd gotten a schmazzle with the coach, Pat Hegan. I remember, I was sent to Three Rivers, I didn't know where. Three Rivers, Trois Rivières, I think it was called, and I had no idea what. And it was Eastern Pro League. That was a good league. It was I think it was only about 3 or 4 years. But it was the Eastern Pro League, and I was sent there, and I got lost. And I remember saying, I never forget this. I remember saying the joke. I remember saying to Eddie Shore, I said, "Well, where is Three Rivers?" He says, "Go through Vermont, you hit Connecticut, and then when you hit the Canadian border, turn right." and I didn't. I got lost anyhow. So I always remember those days, and it was a tough deal. When you know, back in those days, there was only 6 teams in the National Hockey League, and they only carried 5 defensemen. Now, so that was 30 defensemen of all of hockey. Now I think they carry about eight, and there's 31. Well, there will be 31 teams pretty soon. So close to 300 makes the team. So everybody that was playing in the American Hockey League, the Western League, and the Central League would be playing in the National Hockey League now. So it was a tough time to break in when they only had five defensemen on each team. So it was tough back in those days. They you were like almost like a slave, to tell you the truth.
Don, just go ahead, Nez. No,
you
no.
Part of the Vancouver Canucks prior to them opening up in the NHL, the year they won the Western Hockey League championship. What was that like in playing in Vancouver?
Well, I was playing in Rochester, and they needed a defenseman up there. And again, I was selected. I was on Rochester. Joe Crozier was out in the Western Hockey League at the time, and. I was trying to think of some of the guys that you might know. Andy Bathgate, I think, was on the club. Yeah. And I think we ended up second. I forget, but we went to the playoffs. We never lost a game in the playoffs. We won the championship and never lost a game. And we played in the Coliseum, which was a beautiful arena. It was just absolutely gorgeous arena, and we used to pack it. I think you had about 15,000 there every game. And it was terrific, and we never lost a game in the playoffs, and I think we played Portland, we played, I forget who else we played, because it's three or four other teams. Anyhow, we had a great team, and imagine never losing a game in the playoffs.
Don, you played a few years for Eddie Shore in the Springfield Indians. I think you won a couple of American Hockey League Cups, but Eddie Shore is one of the most interesting characters in NHL history, one of the greatest defensemen ever.
Yes, he was.
In fact, they said, he was the pre-Bobby Orr, but he had a reputation for being a tough son of a gun.
I like what you say, tough. he was they call him eccentric, and back then they call him eccentric, and he was eccentric. I think he was nuts, and he used to suspend guys for a different play, believe it or not, and they hadn't played in a month. And if he wanted to keep the payroll down, he'd just suspend them. He was a tyrant. He knew he had the guys, and a lot of the guys wanted to make the National Hockey League, and a lot of guys did. Teddy Harris and Kent Douglas. He was Rookie of the Year in the National Hockey League. So a lot of guys went from him to. He had a real good club, and we won. I think Brian Killery was the captain. We won three Calder Cups back in those days. They call them Calder Cups. And he was a tyrant. I could tell you stories on Terry. I remember one time, a goaltender, I think it was Georgie Wood, he kept telling him to quit going down and making a save. And this is a true story. He tied him, but he tried a rope around his neck, and he tied it to the goalpost. I'll tell you one thing, he did go down after that. That was just one of the stories he told. I could tell you about him, but I'll tell you, he was a great. If you look at his record, he was a great defenseman, colorful, and I don't think he was as good as Bobby Orr, but who is as good as Bobby Orr? But he was sure colorful, and the people loved him. And he was a tyrant. There's no doubt about it.
So your career ended in the American Hockey League, and you decided to go in the workforce, and you were the Cadillac salesman.
I retired, and I was working on construction. I had a good job. My good friend Captain Whitey Smith, he was superintendent, and he was my best friend, and he got laid off. And if you remember back in around 1980, the recession hit, and I got laid off. And that's the only reason I got back into hockey. I never had a job, and I was unemployed for about 4 or 5 months, so I know how it feels to be unemployed. And the Lord said, you get back and play hockey, get back into something you know. So I listened to the Lord, and I went back, and I tried out, and I made the club. And halfway through the season, I got made coach. I get fired at the end as usual, and then I get made coach again. And for 3 years when I was unemployed, I was coaching Bobby Orr. And
wow.
Imagine that. That's hard to believe, Bobby. Boston Bruins, you know, you go from unemployment, you can't get a job anywhere, couldn't get a job doing anything. And in 3 years, I was coaching Bobby Orr. So,
how did you get back into coaching?
When you're, I think the greatest motivation in the world is hunger. And I was hungry. I was going to succeed. I don't know. I remember when I took over the coaching, I think we won. We were 18 points out when I took over, and we missed it by 1 point. And I remember the guy calling me in at the end. I was too much of a player's coach. I wasn't sticking with the Vancouver. And I remember Doug Adams calling me in, and he said, we're making a change in your department. Honest to God, for a second, I think, who's the poor guy in my department? It was me. And so so then I was fired, and then I was unemployed again. And about six owners bought the, they were going to fold the Rochester Americans. They were going to be folded because they were losing money. And six owners from Rochester bought the club, and they made me a coach. And I was happy. I was happy as a pig in mud. And I phoned him back and said, I'll be general manager of scout too. He said, I said, how many players we got? He says, one. I says, who is that? He says, you. So I was the guy. So that's how I got back into, how I got into coaching. And like I said, we had a very good club, and we had a young club. Neil Francis was the guy that saved me and sent me nine players. And I don't know what I had done without him. Neil Francis, he used to be the general manager and the coach of New York Rangers. So anyhow, I had those, and we did pretty good. And we had, in fact, I think the second year ended up first place in the American Hockey League. So we did pretty good.
Don't want to belabor. I just wanted to give our listeners a sense. You know, we know we tend to focus on the Don Cherry from the last. You know, the great star on Hockey Night in Canada, but we remember it didn't come easy for you. You paid your dues in a lot of different places, and you worked hard, and nothing came easy for you, my friend. And we just wanted to remind our listeners about that. And as I was going through this, I realized, Don, you and I have something in common. Something in common on your Wikipedia page. I found out, you know, after you retired, you became a Cadillac salesman, yeah, a construction worker, and you were a painter.
Making
$2 an hour. Don, my dad was a painter. That's what I used to do in the summertime. And in 1970, 71, 68, I was painting houses in the middle of summer. And quite frankly, I was making a little bit more than you.
I don't know. $2 an hour. I had to get the job, and I established myself as the world's worst car salesman to start with, and then I had no job. Then I had to get working, so I did take up painting houses and stuff like that. I had to keep working, and luckily I got hired by Ridge Construction, which is a part of Kodak. And I met my good friend, Whitey Smith. And I thought I was, if I didn't get let go, I'd still be working on construction. So, yeah, you and I were painters at the same time.
We may have been on the same job somewhere, Don.
Well, I don't know. I don't think so. I was, you were making a lot more money than I was.
Not a lot. I was a student in those days. My dad paid me a fair wage. Let's put it that way. Don, like I said, things didn't come easy for you. You know, you got the job with the Rochester Americans in 71, 72, and lo and behold, you know, you make it up to the Bruins, and you're coaching the greatest hockey player in history.
Absolutely.
Tell us how you moved, how that all came about.
Well, I remember me phoning, I was in Montreal, and I got made coach, and I phoned my son, and he said, does that mean I can go to meet Bobby Orr? And I said, yeah, me too. Well, I was just as happy. He was the greatest. I did every camp. I've been to every training camp. I'd seen them all. I'd seen all the stars. I'm not going to name them all, but I'd been at the camp, and they were good. Don't get me wrong. But the first time I saw Bobby Orr, I mean, I just couldn't believe in person. I'd seen him on television. But when I remember I was playing for Rochester, and we were playing that night against the Boston Braves. And I remember I went, we went to a morning skate, and the Boston Bruins were just practicing. And they were just fooling around. They were going to leave in the afternoon about 4 o'clock. And I remember the first time I saw Bobby Orr, I couldn't believe it. He skated, the nearest I can say is, the nearest I ever saw anybody skate like him was Coffey. And if you notice that Coffey, when he played, the reason he lasted so long is that he used to go to the outside, which was smart. But Bobby, he used to cut in the inside, and you know, that's when he'd get nailed. And, you know, he only played till he was 28 years old, which is, you know, that's when defense would start coming into their own at 28. If you look at Plotfan and all those guys when they're about 26, 20, you know, 25, that's when they really turn it on. And he had to retire at 28 years old. It kind of breaks your heart to think what he might have been. But that's the way he played. And he played reckless. And, you know, he plays like McDavid does now, so reckless. And you know, when you play like that, you open yourself up to injuries. And, you know, and as you've seen, McDavid has been injured a couple of times trying to cut in and stuff like that. But that's the way they play, and you can't tell them not to play that way.
You know, he was a great player, Don. He was so far ahead of the next best player. It was scary. Like in the Gretzky and Lemieux era, they were close to each other. There was nobody close to Bobby Orr. And
you know, it's funny you see that. The year he played for me, believe it or not, and I know there's a lot of people listening, young defensemen listening, he was a defenseman, and he had 46 goals and 89 assists. And he was plus 123. I mean, he was fantastic. I mean, I didn't coach him. I just opened and closed the door and just let him go. But he was fantastic. And I remember I used to say, if you have the puck, when Bobby has the puck, I said, don't go offside. He thought it was funny. I really meant it. And still go offside. And but can you imagine that? 46 goals, 89 assists, plus 123. And the big thing is, too, he had 200 minutes in penalties. He was no cream puff. I mean, I'm not knocking anybody that's playing today or anything, but, I mean, can you imagine I think he had about 5 fights that year. And he didn't have anybody to protect him. He didn't need it. He didn't want it. And he was tough, and he was good. But like I say, he only lasted until he was 28 years old.
We had Brad Park on 2 weeks ago, and he was saying how great it was to play with Bobby Orr for 1 year.
They only lost, I think they lost 1 game out of 10, and when they were on the, Brad used to play the right side, he was the left-hand shot, and he went over to the left side, and he'd fed that puck across to Bobby, you know, just the right, you know how it is, just fed it by ping, and I remember Cesar Maniego was in the net, and Cesar that it was like 2 cannons at the end there, and they didn't, you know how they, a lot of guys don't line up. They didn't have to line up. Park, you know, it was kind of sad in the way, but Brad, is that he would have been picked the best defenseman 7 years in a row, but unfortunately he came along when Bobby Orr was at his best. So but Brad was, boy, I don't know, I didn't realize till I watched a few, watched him, and he must have played about 35, 40 minutes, but he was a great defenseman. I mean, he wasn't that great a skater, but smart, boy, was he smart. So I was very lucky. I had Brad Park and Bobby Orr. I had them. Imagine when we might have never lost another game. I kid you not. If we could take the Stanley Cup champions, Montreal for 7 games in overtime, imagine we would have, if Bobby had been playing. I mean, it wouldn't have been any contest.
Talking about Bobby and Don, in the early 70s, you're painting houses. 72, you start coaching the Rochester Americans. 4 years later, you're behind the bench coaching what some people are saying is the greatest hockey team ever assembled, the 1976 Canada Cup. You were assistant coach. Did you ever envision when you got called up that you'd be behind the bench so quickly coaching perhaps the greatest team ever put together? Your thoughts?
It was the greatest team ever put together. Funny, nobody ever talks about it, but it was the greatest team. Scotty Bowman was the coach. I was assistant coach. Bobby Crum and Al McNeil. We were like the assistant coaches, and I remember I was on the ice with, I was on behind the bench, and you couldn't have two guys like me, Scotty or I. You needed a good assistant coach. But I think Bobby Crum was the first time that he ever had earphones on and stuff like that. So it was, I mean, we were cutting 50 goal scores. I mean, Jean Provo, I think he had 50 goals. We cut him. We cut guys on the French Connection line. It was a fantastic team. I mean, it really, really was. And, you know, and we run into a hot goaltender with Czechs, Drozilla. And he was a tough little goaltender. He kept us at bay, as they say. And we were fortunate that we got an overtime goal to beat him because he was pretty good. And I don't know, he never went to National Hockey League or anything, but I never forgot his name was Drozilla.
Ness?
Yeah, you were talking to Daryl Sutler in between periods about him coming out of his net, right?
So, yeah. What he did was he was pretty smart. He wasn't a big guy, but we had some real blasters. And as we come down either side, as we put our head down to blast the puck at him because we wanted to get it over with, he'd come out about 12 feet. And he'd catch the puck before. So I remember I said to Daryl, I didn't say it to Daryl, I said it to Alan. I was talking up above, and I told Al McNeil and Scotty, Sam Pollock said, "What are you telling me, us for? Go down and tell them." So that's what Sutler did. He held the puck, let on, he busted, held the puck, and slid it home. And I was more surprised than anybody.
So let's talk to you about a trade that was made. Phyllis Esposito and Carol Vladney going for Brad Park and John Rattel.
Well, you have to talk about Phyllis Esposito. I mean, he had 76 goals. Imagine that, getting 76 goals. And he had 63 goals the next year. But the new style was coming in that I was one of the first guys. You stay on for a minute and you come off. And Phil, I'm not knocking him, but he used to stay on a long time. And it was funny all the time. But so they made the trade, and Rattel, I remember he had a bad back, but we had such a tough team, nobody ever touched him. And Park had a bad knee. I think he hurt his knee or something, but nobody touched him after a while. We had a big, big tough team. I think it was the toughest team ever in sports, not hockey. The word was out, don't touch Rattel or don't touch Park. And, it was the same thing as Gretzky when he was in, he had some ankle and McSorley there. It's worth your life to touch one of those guys, especially Gretzky. So you had the guys, and then they put in the instigator rule. And as you can see last year and the year before, worst rule that was ever put in any sport. And you know, most of the stars were injured last year because you can't protect them.
And John, I remember you telling me the story about Phil Esposito being told about being traded and what it was like in the hotel. Can you briefly tell the story?
That's a true story. I remember Harry sent it for me early in the morning at 5:30 in the morning. He says, "You got to get and tell Phil before some reporters get to him." So I phoned Bobby Orr, "Let's go down," and the boy, he was mad, I remember. So we went in, and there was Phil in his white silk pajamas. I'll never forget it. So it was raining outside, and Bobby went and looked out the window, and he was looking out the window, and he, like I said, he was mad, and Phil started to cry. And he said, "Grapes, if you tell me that I've been traded to the New York Rangers, I'm going to jump out the window." I told Bobby, "Guys, Bobby, get away from the window." Phil tells that story. I guess good story anyhow. But he did go, and him and Vadney went. Carol Vadney was a good friend of mine, but he had to do it. So we had those guys, and I knew Rattel, and Rattel 1 year led the team in scoring, and we were first place club. We made first place club. We had 116 points 1 year, and always had over 100 points. And it was because of guys like Brad Park was fantastic.
Thanks, Don. We'll take a quick break here and we'll be right back after our commercial.
It was a rainy day when Pizzaville declared,
"We'll never be the fastest. We'll never be the cheapest. We'll never be the snazziest dressed."
What?
Yeah, my point is, we want to be the best.
At Pizzaville, we want to make the best pizza. Stone-baked, the traditional Italian way.
Pizzaville, stone-baked pizza. Fiercely Canadian, authentically Italian.
This is Daryl Sittler for Alta Infinity in Vaughan. I've worked with some pretty great teams over the years, and the staff at Alta ranks among the very best. Expert sales, superior service, and the largest selection of Infinity cars and SUVs in Canada, and the most competitive pricing anywhere. It's no wonder that Alta has been an all-star performer for well over a decade. Visit AltaInfinityWoodbridge.com, or better yet, drop by the No. 7 Auto Mall at the corner of Martin Grove and Highway 7. Experience the difference that makes Alta Infinity the captain's choice.
The only thing I love more than sports is sports radio. Take it away, boys. The Naz and Wally Sports Hour on Zoomer Radio.
Welcome back. We're in conversation with Don Cherry. There's one area I have to ask you. Your brand, the Don Cherry brand, aside from your outspokenness, has been your sartorial splendor. You have entertained us with your verbal skills, and you've also entertained us with your ability to put yourself together. Jackets, ties, shirts, you've been cutting edge, and we always looked forward every Saturday night or every time you were on to what jacket you were going to be wearing. Not so sure you're making enough money in the American Hockey League to support that habit. But Don, when did you acquire? Is it something you've always wanted to look sharp? Did it come at some point in time? How did that all come about?
Well, I always liked my coach, Joe Crozier, was always a sharp dresser, and I always liked, I don't know what it was, but I know the players used to like their coach looking sharp behind the bench. In fact, the year before I went there, the coach wore a leather jacket all the time, and I was always I always did dress. My mother was a seamstress for the Royal Military College, and my dad was a sharpest dresser. Yeah, I remember he used to wear beautiful suits, and he was bigger, a lot bigger than I was. He had a 17.5-inch neck and a nice vest and stuff like that. So I always did, and I used to wear plaids all the time. I used to like plaids, and so then when I became coach, I honestly could, if I didn't feel good behind the bench, and I remember I had sweatsuit on, I knew it didn't fit very good. I honestly didn't feel it. I didn't feel that right behind the bench. And then I took, and then I went from there, and then I started, I have nice dress. And when I went to hockey night in Canada, I have a nice jacket on, and then they started to feel good. And I paid for all those jackets too. I never got anything free. And I pay for my shirts and I pay for my ties. Because nothing's free in this world, as people find out. So I used to pay for them all. And sometimes I used to get four or five at a time. And I used to pick the material. And I used to get the material, honestly, I used to get the material at Fabricland. And they'd make the the coop used to make the downtown. They used to call it the coop. It's an awful name, but the coop. He used to make them. John the coop. And I think the kids had a lot of fun with the ties too. I used to have a lot of funny ties, Looney Tune ties and Walt Disney ties and stuff like that. So I could see the people had a kick out of it, and. So that's why I kept getting more and more and more and more, and I had a lot of fun.
Don, I always ask this question, and I asked Dave Keon this question 2 weeks ago. I asked Peter Mansbridge the question 2 weeks ago. Who are your heroes?
My heroes were Lord Nelson growing up and Lawrence of Arabia, but I'd say Lord Nelson was killed in the Battle of Trafalgar. So I would say people like that, and you have to have heroes like that. That's to me, that was always, he was always my hero growing up. And I think I got every book that's ever been written on him. And I think it's just great.
What did you admire about him?
Well, first of all, he was brave to start with, and he died very young. And the English always like their heroes to die young, and so did Lawrence of Arabia. But Duke of Wellington, I read all the books, all those books. I think that reading books really helps on something like that. And the reason I liked him was first of all, the players all liked him. I call him the players. The sailors all liked him. They thought he was one of them. And I think that's where I got the idea to be a player's coach, and ended up getting me fired all the time. But we had it. Now, the last year I played, the last year I coached was in Colorado. It wasn't very good, but that was because we had a good club. We really did have a good club. I mean, we really did have a good club. We just had Hardy Astrom as the goaltender. You're not going anywhere unless you have a goaltender. As anybody, show me a good coach and I'll show you a good goaltender. Yeah. And that's exactly. So, yeah, I read a lot of books, and I was a player's coach, and they won when I played, and they won when I coached, and I don't have no regrets at all.
You made the best trade in hockey when you traded Ken Hodge for Rick Middleton.
Yeah, that was the best trade in hockey.
That was the biggest deal.
That was the best trade of all time.
Yeah.
We traded a guy. They get 500 goals. I think he got 500 goals. And Kenny Hodge was near the end of his career, to say the least. And I think he got 25 goals. So I think it was one of the it was what I would have to say was maybe one of the greatest trades of all time. And it was a great trade. And Ricky Milton turned out to be a heck of a player. It took me a while to get him straightened out. But boy, oh boy, when he was when he'd have the puck, they didn't call him nifty for nothing.
And is it true that you were offered the least coaching job after the 79-80 season?
Yeah, I had given my word to Ray Miron, which he was a general manager. And I remember getting a call from Al Eagleson, and he said, I've got a great contract here for you, an extra year in the contract, more money, and you can be near your mother, which is in Kingston, Ontario. You visit her all the time. And I said, I can. I've shaken hands. And he said, I didn't shake your hand. So I went to Colorado and ended up with, and the guy that was knifing me all the time was the guy that I shook my hands with, was Ray Miron. And but it didn't matter. And it worked. Lord works in mysterious ways. I went, and then I jumped to I had no job, and then I jumped to Hockey Night in Canada, and I met a great guy there, Ralph Mellenby. He was the executive. He took a liking to me. The only reason I kept on there because of Ralph Mellenby, and he kept me going for a long time. And I think it was on there 40 some years. So I know if I had gone to Toronto, Harold Beller and I would have had him. You know, I had a fight like that.
Oh, the Lord, great to see you, though. That's
yeah. Well, I wouldn't have been on Hockey Night in Canada. I did color for 3 or 4 years, and then they said, "Well, it was too, I got too much trouble being in color." So they said, "We'll put you on for about 6 minutes at the end of the first period." Ralph Mellenby said, "You won't get in any trouble then." Little did I know. So I had a lot of fun, and Ralph was a great guy. Ralph kept me around. If that had been for Ralph, I would have been fired. Well, I think the CBC would have fired me the first year if it hadn't been for Ralph.
I understand you were offered the coaching job for the Saskatoon Blades.
Bill Hunter. Yeah, I would have went. A lot of people don't realize that he almost had the St. Louis Blues, and I think it was one guy. Forget his name. Stepped in and bought the club, but he showed me the arena. I think it had about 12,000 people. It was a brand new arena, and he says we can extend the back until we get about 16,000 in here. And you know how the people, great people out west, they how great they are and everything out there. They would have packed that. They would have packed that place. And I was going back with Wild Bill Hunter. That would have been a good combo. well, Bill, the other night when we went on the road. But the National Hockey League wasn't too happy, but there's nothing they could do. And it was in Saskatoon. We would have had a great time.
Was Harry Ernest the guy that you're talking about, Don?
Yeah, he was the guy that he stepped in at the last minute. And the NHL was very happy that he did because they wanted to keep him in St. Louis.
Don, over the years, you've donated your time and your talents to so many great causes. And we want to make sure we remind our listeners and that your legacy is not forgotten in terms of your accomplishments. You know, women's hockey has become popular in Canada, but you and Rose, women's and sledge hockey for that matter, you were advocating on behalf of, you and what Rose were advocating on behalf of women's hockey back in the late 70s and early 80s. You were way ahead of your time on that. In 1997, the women's national hockey team paid tribute to you and Rose. You picked up that cause. You were way ahead of, you and Rose were way ahead of so many people on that.
I remember Hazel McCallion. She was, I never forgot, Hazel, Hurricane Hazel, everybody knows her. She was the mayor of here, and I just moved here, and she says, listen, I want you here at Melville Arena. I never forget it. And I said, well, it's not David Game. I'm not going to. You be there. And Hazel said to be there. So I went there, and I saw the young girls loved hockey just as much as the guys. And let's, I hate to say this, but there was a joke. It was a joke back in those days, women's hockey. I mean, nobody paid any attention to them. And I remember I paid my way to Ottawa, and to do the game. And the women loved hockey, and women do love hockey. As the girls' hockey, I call them girls. That's terrific, and you can see them today. And I think they're having I think the leagues are. My personal opinion is that the league will. They will get together. The two leagues will get together of women's hockey, and that the NHL will step in, and they will. They'll have a great league, and. You look at Eddie Wickenheiser and people like that, and Jim Heffert. I mean, they're good hockey players.
Don, so many other great things you've done, and in the current world, we tend to forget, and we want to remind. You've always been one of Canada's most popular broadcasters, one of Canada's most popular cultural icons for a long time. In 2004, there was a show, and by listeners, and this is, we don't forget, you were one of Canada's most popular people. You were voted Canada's seventh greatest Canadian ever by listeners, by viewers.
Yeah.
When that hit, how'd you react to that? How'd you feel about it?
Well, I'm definitely not one of the greatest Canadians. Terry Fox, guys like that.
But people voted you.
I was one of the most popular, I think, because I was on television. I mean, I don't put myself with guys like that. But I think I was most popular at the time. And I think I think a lot of people did it to tick off the CBC. Never figured not. Like my right now, my daughter is head of Don Cherry's pet rescue, she's the president of it, and she does a lot rescue dogs and cats and any animals and I think donkeys and things like that. And she asked me if she could use my name, and she does, and she does a great job. She works at that too, and she works at the Kidney Foundation. So, but the Don Cherry's pet rescue is near and dear to my heart. I'll tell you that because. She shows me pictures of dogs that have been mistreated, and she puts her money where her mouth is, as they say. She was up north, way up north, with dogs up there and everything like that. So she really does. She really works hard at it. I don't, but she does, and we do things like that. And we made the Rose Cherry Home for Kids, which she did again. She it was Cindy did it again. And He does all the work, and I get all the glory, I guess. But she does all the work.
You were involved with the Mississauga Ice Dogs Junior Hockey Team. How was that experience for you?
Well, it wasn't very good. It wasn't very good because, as anybody knows, that has anything to do with junior hockey. But you have to have your brains pounded out for a couple of years to get the first round draft choice. Well, I went from I was coaching, trying to coach them, and being Hockey Night in Canada and a radio. So I had too many things going. But we want a lot of people don't realize that the Mississauga Ice Dogs won the Eastern Championship there in 6 years, and 1 year we had more guys drafted to the NHL than any other team in junior hockey. But the first couple of years, you have to get your brains pounded out,
absolutely,
as I said, to get those first-round draft choices. And that's what we did. And holy smokes, there was no mercy on me. And it was the toughest time, I think, of my life trying to coach that team and the radio show and Hockey Night in Canada. And it was tough. We had it was very, very tough. But like they say, I wasn't there, but with the players that we drafted, and that they won the championship in 6 years. There's been teams in that junior hockey that have been there in the league 40 years have never done that. So, but it was not fun. If you ask me, it was not fun at all. And I never had a day's fun the whole time I was there. To go in there with an expansion team, it was murder.
You were involved when the sticks changed from a $40 stick to a $275 stick.
I remember one of the owners, Patrick O'Sullivan's dad, went out and bought four sticks that it cost $1,200. I couldn't believe it. And it cost and you have to really admire those guys that own a junior club. They don't make any money. I don't know how they survive. They do it because they love the game. That's why they're in it, because they're not. I think there's about three teams that make money, and London's one of them. But London Knights and that. But they do it because they love the game. And junior hockey, when you see a guy there, he loves the game because he's not making any money, I guarantee you.
Don, you've over the years, you've been the most, if not the most vocal supporter of our troops. I can't think of anybody else who's supported our troops. You've been over to Afghanistan. You've been in the line of fire. Just because your thoughts on supporting our troops have been always so important to all of us. We're in a war now, Don, and we've got different troops who are fighting that war. The troops now are in hospitals. They're nurses, they're doctors, they're first aid workers. There's so much going on in the world, and they need our support. And I know that you've been you've been there for them since day one, and we'd love to have your thoughts on the sacrifices that are being made today by so many.
Well, you know what I think of the troops and the policemen and the firemen and the first responders. I mean, we are in a war, and I think if everybody does what they're told, you see some of them at beaches and they're just down in the States. It just makes you wonder, but. No, we do as they're told. We stay 6 feet apart, and we definitely will get over this. And it's going to take us a while. Premier Ford, you got to give this boy. Has he come out? They got a picture of him loading up a mask at his truck. He didn't know it was. His picture is being taken. But if you listen to him and you listen to these first responders and the nurses and that, they do a great job. And if we do what we're told. If I can do as I told, I suppose everybody else can too. And my wife takes care of me pretty good. I'm getting kind of old, as they say, and she takes care of me. A little bit. My wife takes care of me pretty good. I do as I'm told, and I watch a lot of television. And like when I started off this conversation, I look at my goldfish. So I try to stay off and stay away from people as much as I can. And we definitely will get over this. And I sure appreciate you guys having me on for your show, and good luck, and I hope you guys keep well, and we all keep well.
Don, on that note, we just got a couple of minutes to wrap it up. Things happened last November. We chatted. We decided we weren't going to get into the details of that. But what came out of that is certain people supported you, one of them being Bobby Orr, vocal in his support of you. How much did the support of people who came to your, took your side or wanted to support you, how much did that mean to you?
Well, it's funny, when my son is, he rates the minor midget hockey, and we went out, you know, and people don't know what to do. They, you know, a guy just fired, they kind of feel sorry for him and that. And I was, it was incredible. And the kids all had a great time, and I took pictures of them, and, you know, you're sitting there watching the game. And he rates all the minor midget in Ontario, the GTHL actually, and it was tough. 43 years. I don't care what job, but I think it was 43. You know, on a job for 43 years, it really does hurt. But hey, that's the way the world is, and it was time to go. I had a good time. It's time to leave it to somebody else, and I appreciate it all the time I was on there. And If a guy like Ralph Malik, who used to take care of me all the time, and I'm very happy. I've thanked the Lord that I was on that long. And as I'm leaving, I always say toodaloo, and I've had a good time.
Naz, last words.
Don, thank you for being the number one Zoomer around, for sure.
Okay, Naz, Wally, I sure appreciate it, and I'll talk to you again sometime.
Dan, okay. Don, thanks so much, and we appreciate your time. Thank you very much.
Okay,
thanks.
Well, we see you, Naz. Toodaloo.
Okay. Bye-bye.
That was our interview with Don Cherry. We hope you enjoyed it. Naz, any thoughts?
Wow, what a great man he is. Great man.
We didn't chat with him about, you had chatted with him before we went on the air. It was your work, that made this interview possible. And we decided, Don didn't really want to talk much about what happened in November, and we respected his wishes. And quite frankly, I think we've moved beyond that as well, Naz. In case our listeners, we didn't deliberately stay away from it. We've talked about it on the show, and if anybody wants to know, Naz and I have some very strong opinions about how Don Cherry was dealt with by Sportsnet, and if you're interested in those opinions, we don't have enough time left today, but our podcast from when it happened is posted on Zoomer Radio's website. It's posted under the heading Don Cherry and Mike Babcock Fired. It was posted on November 27th. We've made our opinions. I've got strong opinions about what happened. Unfortunate. From a lot of different perspectives, it's unfortunate things happened the way they did. I think it could have been handled better by everyone, by the people at Sportsnet. There's no heroes in any of this story in terms of what transpired in November. I'm thankful we got the opportunity to talk to Don because, everything happened so quickly back in November. We got an opportunity to look back on his career and a lot of the great things that he's done. And, you know, whether in the world today that's so political, I guess your viewpoint really depends upon your politics. And I consider myself fortunate in one sense. I don't look at the world through the prism of one ideology. I can argue both sides of this debate. I'm thankful for having been entertained by Don for so many years, and thankful for getting the opportunity to chat with him for an hour and reliving his wonderful career and his struggles and everything he had to do. And certainly the debate, Hockey Hall of Fame, Naz, I'll turn it over to you. Don Cherry should be in the Hockey Hall of Fame. Right? And he's never going to get in. Not with the crew that's there. It's too, you know, they don't understand. It's not the, it's the Hockey Hall of Fame. It's not the Hockey Hall of Saints. Don may not be a saint. He may have said some things over the years that may have rubbed some people the wrong way. and that's fine. But I don't think there's any doubt his accomplishments are deserving of him being in the Hall of Fame. Naz?
Wally, wouldn't it have been great to see Carol Ballard and Don Cherry on the same team?
Anyways, I'm getting the cut sign. Apparently, our time's come up. Maybe we'll open up the show next Sunday and just revisit and finish off our thoughts. To all our listeners, have a fantastic week. Stay safe. Thank you.
This podcast is proudly produced and presented by the Zoomer Podcast Network, home of great podcasts like Marilyn Lightstone Reads, Idea City on the Air, and The Garden Show.